This is Digital Dave, and I'm sitting down with Dean Brown and Ryan Van Haren. Dean Brown is an air traffic controller from Indianapolis, USA, and Ryan is from Canada, I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, I work out of the Vancouver Area Control Center on the West Coast as a approach controller there.
And you want to talk about air traffic controllers and pilots who should or thinking or are declaring emergencies. I'm a pilot. What are the types of things you think I should declare an emergency for? Let's start off with that.
Anything you think you have a problem. Anytime safety of flight is in doubt, you'd like an extra set of eyes, an extra, you know, somebody to know what's going on, give us a call. Just use plain language. Don't worry about the exact phraseology. Tell us you have a problem. If you need to, tell us you have an emergency, and we'll get the ball rolling.
You would help me make that decision if I was a little confused?
We can.
I think if you've gotten to the point where you're asking that question, you should be declaring an emergency. So I like to simplify it even further. I mean, both Dean and I fly as well recreationally. I flew professionally for a number of years and have experienced everything from fires to failures. If for a moment it's running through your head, hey, I wonder if this constitutes declaring an emergency, just do it. You got nothing to lose. And the biggest problem we find with general aviation pilots is they have a fear of declaring an emergency because they think that they're going to get in trouble when they get on the ground. And it could be a no doubt emergency, you know, I'm losing oil pressure. They think they're going to get investigated and get in trouble. That's not the case. Or it could be something that they think is trivial, and they think that they declare an emergency, they get on the ground and everything turns out A-okay, that they're going to get in trouble for wasting the time or using too much resources in declaring an emergency that didn't end up being catastrophic. But we want to, you know, really debunk that and have people know that you're not going to get in trouble for declaring an emergency.
We have something else a lot of pilots may not be aware. Controllers have the authority to declare an emergency on your behalf. We're not required to tell you necessarily. So if on our side of the microphone, if there's some doubt about the safety of flight, we can declare the emergency. We can bring in some extra team help to deal with the problem. Pilots are familiar with FAR 91.3. As pilot in command, if you have an emergency, you have certain relaxation from the Part 91 flight rules in order to meet that emergency. We get something akin to that on the controlling side. So we can declare an emergency on your behalf. We don't necessarily have to tell you, and you can be getting more priority handling than you're actually aware of. So just if in doubt, speak up.
Now, have you ever done that? Declared an emergency for a pilot?
Yes. Most recent time was a corporate jet about 6 months ago.
The universal reaction from the pilot when they finally land safely, do they say thanks for helping me out for doing that?
We never really hear from them. I don't.
Some do, and we absolutely love it when a pilot lands and then finds out and calls back to the facility, sends a thank you note. That's worth its weight in gold.
Okay, guys, remember that, pilots? Give him a handshake and a steak.
We listen to words that pilots will use other to euphemize the word emergency, because a lot of people don't want to say the big E word.
Oh.
So there's little trigger words that we'll listen for, and it'll be, you know, a problem, indication, malfunction, hydraulic, oil, engine, gear. I think we're going to be okay. If we hear anything like that, the alarm bells start going off in our head and just saying, you know what, here's a guy who's in a position or flying an airplane that, you know, something isn't 100%. I like to say, you're in the air and you have an indication or something's going on with the airplane. If you were on the ground and did your walk around and found that same issue, or you're doing your run up in the middle of your run up, that same issue came up, and if you wouldn't go flying, but now you're flying, let's call it what it is. It's an emergency. And so we're listening to those little words that pilots use to substitute for emergency, and we'll start the ball rolling.
Okay, what about if I'm a VFR pilot and I find myself flying in clouds?
Be honest.
Okay.
Be honest.
Would you consider that an emergency situation?
Absolutely.
That it is an emergency situation.
Okay.
The safety of flight is in doubt. People are not qualified to do that. The number one threat in that case is you're very unlikely to hit another aircraft. There is a possibility for controlled flight and terrain. The number one threat is loss of basic control of the aircraft. Establish basic control, call a controller, get some help, because we can help alert you to a low altitude situation. We can steer you in the direction of good weather. We can get other pilots to report where there's some holes and get you down. We can find out VFR weather conditions. We can do a lot of things. So aviate, navigate, communicate.
Yep.
Fly the airplane. The navigate partly is about getting your short-term tactical decision-making. I just need to go straight and level. Or maybe I know there's VMC right behind me. That's where I want to go. A lot of pilots in that situation, they've kind of driven it in sort of deep and have maybe lost track of that. Okay, fine. Straighten levels all you need right now. Call and get help, and then we can help with the other other parts of that.
I think Dean makes a really good point there. We were talking before this, and when I was doing my flight training 15 years ago, I found myself in a position where I had flown VFR and IMC. And it was scary. And I got right on the radio and talked to a controller, and it just happened to be a controller in the same sector that I work now, is in the same airspace, coincidentally. And they, you know, found me a hole and got me back VMC, and I was pretty shaken up. And, you know, in my mind, I just wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to be a pilot. That's all I ever wanted to do. But that experience kind of stuck with me. And after flying, you know, professionally for 10, 11 years, I started thinking about, you know, being a controller, and that experience that I had when I was VFR and IMC really stuck with me. And when I interviewed with our agency, they said, well, why do you want to do this? And I said, well, you know, I've got this great flying background now, and, you know, most of the day-to-day is going to be routine, but if at some point in my career I can help one pilot out of a situation like I was helped out of, it will have been worth it. Little did I know, after I got qualified and started working, that opportunity doesn't present itself once in a career. It's, you know, sometimes a weekly or monthly occurrence. It may not be to that extreme, but we're there to help. And Dean's a CFII, and, you know, I'm an ATP guy, and I'd say where I work, about 30% of the controllers are pilots. So if you find yourself VFR and IMC, or in a spot where you're just not sure, speak up. And even if the controller's not a pilot, they will, you know, they say they're on the outside line, they'll hit the PA and they'll page somebody back up who's in the building who is a pilot, who can come up and maybe give another perspective to you.
And that be that calm voice in the darkness.
Yeah, I try.
It can be a calm voice. It can be as simple as the controller reminding you, just fly the airplane, do as you were trained, and run your checklists. There's some wonderful audio that's out on the internet about an airplane in Santa Fe, New Mexico a few months ago. The guy, you can hear it if you listen to the audio, a lot of tension in his voice. He lost the engine, was heading for the airport, really very concerned, very agitated. The tower controller at one point came on and said, sir, just do as you were trained. You instantly hear the change in the voice inflection, and the guy very calmly says, well, I've got an interstate here, I've got a frontage road, there's less traffic on the frontage road, looks like it's clear of wires, I think I'll put it down there. Yeah. Walked away, not a ding on the airplane. But it can be, so you don't need the controller to tell you to fly the airplane or how to do it. There can be some situations where that can come in. Just a calm voice, not only for you, but also for your passengers. Mm-hmm. Indy Center, a few months ago, we had a situation with another single-engine GA airplane, VFR flight following, lost the engine. Turns out it was just a mechanical thing. Those are rare, but it does happen. He tried to make it to an airport, didn't, made an off-airport landing. But the controller, in talking to the pilot, that two-way communication, nice calm voice, controller who happened to be a pilot as well, methodically talked about running checklists and doing things. The pilot's wife and teenage son, his passengers have their headsets on. They heard that. They started doing things to prepare the cabin, to tighten their seat belts, to get the seat back, you know? And so it gets your passengers who are wearing headsets in on what's going on.
So you never really know how much benefit it's going to be.
I mean, we had one scenario a few months ago, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was a guy in a single Cessna, and he checks in with us, and he's about 10 miles from his destination, still up at 8,000 feet. And you could just tell in his voice that he was uncomfortable. He was out of his element. He was a little bit disoriented. He was just nervous, and you can hear it. And so we, you know, just tried to be calm and vector him towards the airport and keep telling him where it is. And he says, I don't see it. And I don't see it. And then, you know, kind of set him up on final as best we could. He says, I don't see it. And then it dawned on me, well, this airport is, you know, pilot controlled lighting, RCAL.
Mm-hmm.
I said, are you aware it's RCAL? He goes, can you turn it on for me? I mean, I can't do that from the center. But, you know, being a pilot and knowing about workload management and task saturation in the cockpit, the last thing I'm going to have this guy do is give him an instruction to switch frequencies and go key a mic 7 times. Because we want to maintain positive communication with this guy, try and keep him calm. So we have, you know, and it's, when we talk about crew resource management, it's not just the pilots or the flight attendants. The controllers are part of that. Pilots and other airplanes are part of that. So what did we do in that scenario? Instead of having him do one more thing, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. We got airliners flying overhead and they're drinking their coffee, going to their destination. So I called over to the sector next to me. I said, hey, see that 777 up at 380 there? He goes, yeah. I said, just have them tune up, you know, frequency, you know, 12822, and just have them key the mic 7 times for me. And the airline guys are more than happy to do it. And the guy that I'm talking to, like, his voice changed like that. I got the runway. I said, all right, you know, just land. And when you're on the ground, please call me so that we know that you're safe. And you know, it's a happy ending, but it's, the resources aren't limited to inside your cockpit or in the ATC center. We can reach out and employ other people in other airplanes to try and help out as well.
That's interesting. I would have never thought that. That was a very ingenious use of a passing airplane.
That's just it's resource management, right? And that's what this is all about.
So the bottom line is, don't be afraid to call.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I could use some help here.
Absolutely. Another thing that I wanted to bring up too, in declaring emergencies, is no matter how trivial it is, go ahead and do it. And yeah, we will. You know, if the airport has emergency response, we will activate that, and there will be trucks next to the runway. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of these smaller airports have staffed full-time fire department on field, and they may only get a call every once a week, twice a week. And you know, just like pilots and firefighters need practice too. Even if it's just getting their gear on, getting in the truck, and getting to the end of the runway, we all need numbers to justify our jobs. You know, if air traffic goes down, you know, we have less controllers. You know, if passenger numbers go down, there's less airline pilots. Well, if there's no calls to justify the fire department being there at the airport, very good reason for a city or a municipality to perhaps consider saving the money on the fire department at the airport. So let's get the firemen having their practice. Let's keep the numbers and justify their jobs. And as Dean, you know, very well put earlier, he said they may suit up and end up at the end of the runway and realize, oh, we forgot this piece of equipment. Well, at least we've put the firemen in a position to call it a training exercise if it's a non-event, and now next time they're going to remember that piece of equipment for the next guy. So it's a kind of a circle of life, if you will, I think.
Yep. Okay. What they used to say, climb, call, confess, and comply, or something like that was the mantra I remember from student days a long time ago.
And if you've made a mistake, be honest. You know, better to be in a little bit of hot water than 6 feet under.
Oh, yeah.
A couple things to remember about the controllers in the situation. One, controllers don't have a cop mindset. Nothing against cops, but that's not what we're there for. We really are there for positive help, and emergencies are the highest priority thing that we have, as you can imagine. The other thing that I want to convey to pilots is there's a lot of teamwork that can go on behind the scenes that you don't know about. You know, Ryan talked about getting the lighting turned on at an airport at night or something. With airplanes on another frequency, we can get other controllers and supervisors working the problem in the background, bring in meteorologists to find where there's good weather and so on. There's a lot we can do. And the technology is helping us more and more nowadays. We can, among other things, we can get the latitude longitude coordinates of an airplane off the radar, convert that to one of these commercial software sites where you can type in, you know, instead of searching for how to get to grandma's house or where's the closest restaurant, we can type the lat long into those search engines, pull up the satellite view, and have some idea of where somebody's going to make an off airport landing. We've had situations where we've had pilots make an off airport landing. It does happen. You really want to cut down the search time as much as possible. And if we have a good feel, and sometimes pilots can even describe, you know, what airport or what field they're maybe thinking they're going into. We've had occasions where we've been able to identify, you know, call some search and rescue or fire department, something like that, two states away in a center environment, and say, look, we've got an airplane going down with three people on board. He's going to be down at the intersection of, let's say, County Road, whatever, and State Road 16. You know, near the red barn, that's where he says he's going, and have him rolling before you're down.
We've got databases like at our fingertips in position of all the emergency response for the surrounding communities. We've got a phone right there. We can get somebody else to help out. The other thing is, you know, with some of the controllers also being pilots, and, you know, we only work that one chunk of airspace. We specialize in a very small piece of the sky and the area underneath it. So we become intimately familiar with that geography and that airspace and what's there. And, you know, quite often there's airstrips that aren't on the map, you know, Billy Bob's strip in his backyard. Right. We know it's there because we see him coming off of there all the time and we talk to him. It's not going to be on the map. If you're passing through, you may not know it's there. And you may be not even getting flight following, squawking 1200, doing your own thing. But as soon as you have a tinge that something may be wrong, like dial up the nearest center frequency or tower frequency, let them know, because I may be able to tell you, oh, there's, you know, Billy Bob's cleared out cornfield right there that he, you know, takes his Cessna 180 in and out of every week, and maybe try that. And you're not going to find that on the map, but the controllers typically have a pretty intimate knowledge of their local area.
Right. So, and I would call that tribal knowledge. Use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Well, guys, I want to thank you for stopping in. This is good information. And hopefully I never have to use it, but it's nice to know that if I do, you're there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
This has been Dean Brown and Ryan Van Herren. This is Digital Dave, and you're listening to EAA Radio.